This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 147. It's the 19th of April, and I'm here with my colleague and co-host, Henry Viola Hare. You can find him at HT Viola on Twitter X, and also he's on Blue Sky App, I believe. Henry, aren't you?
I am indeed on Blue Sky, Peter.
Okie dokie. And you can find me on X and Blue Sky as well, at Conkers 3. Ladies and gents, there's been loads happening across the markets and geopolitically as well. But as this is a investing podcast, we're going to focus on the investing. We're going to leave all the different shenanigans and all the other bits and pieces that are going on to those other people that are doing what they're doing at the moment. And we're going to focus on what's happening in the UK and global markets. Henry, what has been teasing you the most? What have you seen the most regarding the markets that, without going into the stocks we're going to talk about later, what is it that you've been looking at and going, I don't believe that? That's just what's caught your attention over the past 2 weeks since we're here. And then I want to talk about what happened last pod.
Well, the big one for me actually came out today. So I was quite pleasantly surprised by HSBC's earnings results that came out today. You know, straight into the detail here, they've had an exceptionally strong 2024. And I was just blown away, to be honest. I mean, this is a major multinational bank we're talking about, HSBC, operations around the world. It's actually been a three bagger from all-time lows. If you go back to the all-time lows of, I think it was 2020, this is up, you know, from £3 to £9 or whatever it is. Their latest results, again, astoundingly strong. Profit before tax rose by $2 billion to $32 billion. The profit before tax increased by 1.4 to 34 billion. Revenue at 66 billion was stable. I mean, the reason this caught my eye was because there's an awful lot of chatter, certainly in the UK press, about the economy being on its knees. We're all doomed. Unemployment's going to skyrocket, etc. And yet these results indicate on a global level, actually, the economy seems to be fairly healthy. Certainly the financing side of it. So I was quite encouraged by that today.
Yeah, it's one of them, isn't it? You look at the profitability of some of these banks, and it beggars me. Believe, I mean, I saw that today, and I thought that NatWest ones were reasonably good. The Lloyds one before that was reasonably good. And my concern is they're actually making too much money, right? That's my concern, Henry, because they could be charging the customers less. It could be lowering they could be increasing the interest rates on people's savings and lowering the cost of the variety of different loans and mortgages and other services that they do. But yeah, what does it say here? I think you said it. $32.3 billion in profit before tax.
Yeah.
Yeah. 26.9 billion dollars given to shareholders in buybacks and dividends. Yet they're cutting jobs, they're cutting branches.
Oh, the branches are a disaster. I mean, I bank with HSBC. The last branch I went into in Wimbledon, I thought the place was abandoned. I walked in there. There was no one on the ground floor, no customers, no staff. I wandered into what I thought was the back office. It turned out to be a stairwell. Went up the stairwell, came out on the second floor, was greeted by three members of staff who looked at me like I was trying to rob the place. Like, no, I'm actually a customer of yours. Oh, right. What do you want? I said, well, to talk to someone, to be honest.
And this is the thing, you know, I keep mentioning our age difference on here, but there used to be a time, you know, people a few years older than me and maybe a decade older than me used to go in and know the bank manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoever that female was or that male was, they knew who that person was by name. And invariably, sometimes That manager knew the customer's name. Now there's no
It's a
local branches,
totally
Henry.
different world now. Totally. I mean, honestly, this guy looked at me and I thought, I swear, you don't need to call the police. Look, I'm in a suit and tie. I'm a respectable member of the public. I'm just trying to talk to someone. And he's, I mean, the bit that got me as well, his first response was actually, can you turn around and go back? It's all on the app. I thought, if I'd not tried the app first, bear in mind, I'm not 90 years old. I can use a computer, guys. I've tried the app. It doesn't do what I need it to do. That's why I'm here.
My only concern, and they don't really talk about this a lot, Henry, regarding HSBC, is that they've had a phenomenal run regarding profitability, but they have got a lot of exposure to property and commercial property
I do.
in the likes of China, Hong Kong, etc., etc., etc. So if any of that really, I think we've talked about it a couple of times about impairments and so on and so forth. If that becomes another issue again, I think we could see that having a little bit of
A war.
a run to well, a decline in the share price essentially. But good run, mate. Like you say, I have noticed it gone from £3 to £9, and it just goes to show sometimes you don't have to find speculative stocks to get a good return. And if you're patient enough, you said 2020 there, so 5 years, to get a £3 stock to get to £9. And that probably, and that excludes dividends over that 5 years as well. At another 3 or 4% each year on top of what's happened on the CAGR, you'd be laughing your head off, mate. So happy days. No,
Spectacular.
good call with that regarding that one. Thank you very much. Right, I want to take a moment, Henry, and you've got some feedback as well. I know you have, regarding the phenomenal conversation we had with Paul Edenbrow,
What
our
a
special
legend.
guest. Oh, fantastic guest, absolutely amazing guest. We've had a phenomenal feedback for Paul. I think it's the second highest watched YouTube video we've had since we started to put the Twin Peaks on YouTube, and the numbers are inching towards 4K, 4,000 listens and watches overall for the pod. So we've had some phenomenal sort of feedback for that. And he was exceptional. I mean, I can't give him praise enough because he was nervous when he came on. We tried to just chill him out and got him relaxed before we went on air. And then he was fine. He was just absolutely smashed it. So, Paul, I know you're going to be listening to this one. Thank you ever so much again. You smashed it, mate. And we're already getting calls to get you back on the show later in the year so we can see what we can do. I'm pleased to say some people took heed, listened, but also listened to the point that I said Paul doesn't have that many followers, and he's added, let me get this right, 25% more of his followers than he's had over the past 10 years. He's added 25% to that in the past 2 weeks, people. So very, very well done. Your thoughts on it, Henry
Spectacular.
all?
Oh, I mean, what a guy. I'd never spoken to Paul before he came on the show. And I was just really taken aback by how warm he was, by how thoughtful he was. I loved the chat about the teaching, his whole philosophy around investing. But generally, he just came across as a really warm person. And he was someone that I was particularly pleased we'd been able to introduce to our audience because he just embodied so many of the traits that I like to see in the audience, and it's been paid back, like you say, tenfold. I don't think my phone stopped pinging for 2 weeks with people going, "Oh, where did you find this guy? What a legend!" So,
Yeah,
yeah, Paul, if you are
likewise.
listening, thank you again for being such a great star.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, lots of great feedback. I think there's probably more to come as well, Henry. So yeah, kudos to Paul for being exceptional and generous as well. And we have to get him to play the drums apparently next time he comes on. So we will see. We'll get him to play a bit of Phil Collins or Genesis maybe. Right, a few bits of note, Henry, that I wanted to raise, and that is the ongoing pursuit of UK investment companies, equities, stocks, shares, funds, etc. Another one this week that we've had is the UK Healthcare REIT, which I know some people out there have got. And that was, I can't pronounce this, can I? Kohlberg Travis Roberts, KKR. They made a $2 billion takeover bid for Assura, ticker symbol AGR, British healthcare property landlord. However, once again, we're here and Assura's board unanimously rejected the offer, stating that it undervalued the company and its prospects. This was the fourth attempt to acquire Assura by KKR, with the latest bid at 48 pence, a 28% premium to Assura's closing price on February the 13th. Assura's portfolio includes 608 properties worth around 3.1 billion as of the September 2024. Despite the rejection, KKR is considering whether it's going to come back again to pursue the company. So if you've got Assura, you can't be sure of it remaining
Oh.
listed for long. Resist. Couldn't resist. Have you been, what, did you see that, Henry? Anyway, the Assura one
I
coming.
actually completely missed that. That had passed me
Right,
by
okay.
totally. So, yeah, again, it's not a business I know terrifically well. I know the
Yeah.
name, but other than that, I've never really looked at it. But I think this is just symptomatic of where we are in the UK. The market is absolutely getting beaten up on a weekly basis. There's so much value. You've got these private equity firms jumping in and offering 20, 30, 40% premiums. And yet you ask your average retail investor what they think of the UK. Oh, they couldn't
Yeah.
care less. They all want to be in
Absolutely.
Palantir at 700 times earnings or whatever it is.
Yeah, I see a lot of people, and a lot of the portfolio now is wedded to the US. And I'm going, really? You switched over in the past year, year and a half. And they've done, the portfolio's done absolutely phenomenally well because they've gone in there, braved it, risked it, and the returns have been absolutely phenomenal. But I've said this before, some very richly valued companies over there. You know, and ours may be cheap for a reason, Henry. And you know, sometimes I put, you know, I've got my book here, my favorite book, as anyone can see that. You know, that's my Bible, folks, right? Come onto YouTube, you can see my Bible. You know, and it's called The Securities Analysis, Sixth Edition by Benjamin Graham and David L. Dodd. And I use this book to try to analyze the intrinsic value of companies. And basically what I'm trying to do on each occasion that I brave it into the market is to try something that's asset rich. So I'm trying to buy, oh, it's gone.
You're
I'm trying to buy,
smashing up your room over there.
yeah, I'm trying to buy £1 of assets for 60 pence, 70 pence or whatever I can. And if they get it, if it gets the right catalyst, that value of what was a pound before may become £2 or £3 over a period of 3 years, 4 years, or 5 years. But invariably, regardless of how much research you do, if you've got the wrong management, as we've found out with a couple of stocks that we've each owned, the shares are just not going to turn around. They just, you know, drop and drop and drop. So with regards to the intrinsic value, one of the stocks that I'd purchased quite a few years ago now was Renewi when nobody wanted it. So it's a waste company, waste collection company
Yeah,
and
waste
recycling
recycling,
company.
isn't it?
Waste and recycling, yeah. And essentially bought that at £1.90 X amount of years ago. And Macquarie came to bid for it last year, offered £7.75. And I was like, take it, take it, take it. And Renewi went, no, and rejected it. And the share prices went, whoa. And I held on. I'd been doing various different bits and pieces with it, buying on the dips and all the rest of it. And eventually they came back before the new year and offered £8.70 for it. Okay. And it's a big discount. I think it was struggling to get above 8 quid, Henry, for ages because people were like, I'm not sure this is going to happen. We've been here before. And they came back a week or so ago and said and confirmed the bid at £8.70. So I've exited that now from an average of about £1.90 or just above that. And I've just gone, right, okay, But that premium, Henry, you talked about premiums earlier, from when the bid started in November, we were looking at, I think the total premium was 57% premium to the price before the bid, 57. And that's not the highest bid, premium we've seen of late. So yeah, so I'm glad to be out of that one. I've already started looking at a couple of other stocks and started to sprinkle a bit of money around regarding a couple of stocks. And I'll disclose those at some point or other, unless somebody discloses them for me. So yeah, so lots more takeovers coming, folks, regarding investment trusts, REITs, funds, FTSE 100, all the way through to FTSE fledgling companies. We're going to see far more over the next 9.5 months or so until we get to December close of play. Any thoughts on the takeovers going on, Henry?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I mean, it in a lot of ways it's a shame, but I just don't think the valuations are there. I mean, there's talk of trying to get pension money into the UK market. There's talk of trying to increase retail investors' interest in the UK market via this Brexit, not Brexit, sorry, British ISA, which is now being canned apparently.
It's been
Now, I
canned, I
wasn't a
think.
huge fan of it when it was announced, but what I'm, you know, my overarching feeling is that if the British government doesn't do something to support the market, we're not going to have a market left. You know, it you can't carry on in a position where we're hemorrhaging companies like this to takeovers week after week after week. You know, we've got about a quarter of the companies listed that we had 20 years ago or something daft. AIM has done nothing but shrink. The FTSE has gone nowhere. And a large part of that is because we're not backing our own businesses. You know, we're just
Absolutely.
not backing
Like,
them. We don't want the speculative stuff before it's taken off. As soon as it starts to take off, we sell it to the Americans.
absolutely agree with you, mate. I mean, I'm in a situation at the moment where Renewi was my 61st successful takeover exit in 11 years. That excludes the others that didn't end up being takeovers. And over the past 11 years, I would say between the FTSE and AIM, 200 to 300 companies, you know, maybe more, have probably been taken over and gone.
Yeah.
Either become a bolt-on for another company, but they're not listed here anymore.
Yeah.
So how many IPOs have we had in that meantime who have done, which have done success, which have become successful? I dare say not the same amount that we've lost. You know, so we've got to be conscious that we need to nurture these companies. And there's talk also now about potentially getting rid of the cash ISA. And I'm like, you think that's going to encourage people to go into the stock market? The reason why they've got a cash ISA is because they don't want to expose themselves to the stock market. So don't go messing with stuff that you don't need to, I suspect.
Well, I
That's
mean,
what I'm supposed to.
I disagree with you on that, to be honest. I mean, I think if the government is going to give tax breaks for things like saving, that there ought to be some benefit back. And I don't think scrapping the cash ISA is the way to go, but certainly looking at the allowance ratio, you know, if you said it had to be split 50-50 between cash and shares, so 10,000 to cash, 10,000 to stocks and shares. You know, I'd like to see something like that. I'm naturally quite wary of governments mandating things, so I'm a little bit hesitant to say, you know, 50% must go into the stock market because they could just go and buy the S&P 500, and now we're subsidizing the US stock exchange. Daft. But surely there's some intelligent people at the Treasury that could come up with some way of deploying this money in an intelligent manner for the economy.
I will use the American term and take the fifth on that question you've just posed to me, Henry,
Yeah,
regarding intelligent
possibly the
people.
less said, the better.
Right, sir. Now we've had a little ramble and a bit of a chat. Can we go to your first stock of the day, please?
Oh.
Where are you going? What is it called? What does it do? And is it going to be of interest to me? And if I don't know it, will I be interested in it, Henry?
Mate, I think you are going to be beside yourself with this one.
Okay.
When I came across it, I thought this is a Peter Scherer all over. So this is a NASDAQ listed company. So I'm back as your US correspondent, ladies and gents, over
Okie
on the
dokie.
NASDAQ with a global leader in asset optimization software, which enables customers within capital-intensive industries to design, operate, and maintain functions to meet profitability criteria, safety criteria, and sustainability goals. Now, before I go into what all of that jargon means, let's give you the name of the company. It's Aspen Technology. The ticker is AZPN.
Okay.
Now, the business was founded in 1981 as Aspen Tech, and it provides software solutions to optimize engineering, manufacturing, supply chain, and asset management functions. So if you think of a big conglomerate that's got factories and warehouses and is shipping things around all over the place, there's an enormous amount of stuff going on in the business. Lots of processes from people replacing light bulbs to building new conveyor belts to shipping materials. What asset optimization software helps you do is, number one, understand what all of these processes are in your business at a very, very granular level. And two, understand how many of each type of process you need, when you need them, and how many of them you need in order to produce the right amount of product or have the right amount of building space available or whatever for your operational requirements. Now, this is a really complex area. Effectively, you might have heard of the idea of a digital twin. So this is where, if you imagine something like Heathrow Airport, let's take an asset. Heathrow Airport might be a user of asset optimization software. What they do is build a digital model of Heathrow Airport. So it's a digital replica with the runways, with the hangars, with the air traffic control tower, with all the lighting and the water and the sewage pipes. They'll have a virtual version of the luggage hall with individual pieces of luggage on a conveyor belt and the thousands of people that come through the door every day. Some go to coffee shops and some go to duty free and some get on planes and some just walk in and walk straight back out for some unknown reason. Now, what the digital twin enables you to do is model all of these thousands of different things going on every minute of every day of every week of the whole lifetime of Heathrow Airport. And it then starts to let you make decisions about, let's take a really basic example. How often do you need to replace the front door at Heathrow Airport? If 10,000 people walk through the door and it opens and closes 10,000 times a day, let's say, how long is it going to be before the hinge fails and breaks and the door falls off the hinges? I don't know. You don't know. No one knows. But this software will tell
Well,
you
every
that.
12 months, every 2 years, a bit like lifts, haven't they? They've got to be
Exactly.
serviced so often, haven't they? Yeah.
Exactly. Before the door breaks and no one can get into Heathrow Airport on a Monday morning, it's told you go and replace the door. But
Right,
it
good
does.
analogy. Yeah, like that.
A much more complex level. So it doesn't just do doors, it does the sewage pipes, it does the lights, does the tarmacking on the runway. If you're trying to land a plane and the tarmac's worn out, does the plane skid off the runway? You don't want that. You need to resurface the concrete. Now, if you've only got money to resurface the concrete or, I don't know, replace the lighting in the hall, which one do you do first? This software helps you make these sorts of decisions. It's all about availability of assets, uptime, efficiency, capital expenditure. It lets you model the risk of functional processes, identify where the failure points are, and spend your budget in the most effective way to effectively get the most out of your assets. Very, very cool piece of software, very, very cool area of business. And you'll also be interested to know. People like ChatGPT and DeepSeek and all the rest of them, they may be telling you they've just invented AI last year. Actually, that's a load of nonsense. Companies like Aspen Technology have had AI capabilities in their software 30 years.
What?
They've got, yeah.
That
Because all
long?
this data, oh yeah, because all this data comes into the software, it
Oof.
learns. It starts to figure out. You know, when lights fail, whoever's using this software wants to know about it. So before they ask me when the lights are going to fail, I'll tell them. Not only will I tell them, I'll tell them which light bulb to go and buy and where they can buy it from. In fact, wouldn't it be good if I ordered the light bulbs for them? And they just got a shipment on Monday morning with the new light bulbs that they're going to need in 2 weeks' time. I can just go and install them. And in fact, wouldn't it be even better if I could also order the engineer to go and replace them.
I'm hearing you. I'm hearing you.
So this is what industrial AI is all about. And this kind of technology has been around quite a long time. It's quite sophisticated. It's quite advanced for operating complex assets. Customers, if you're Mr. CEO, you don't want to get to Heathrow Airport and be told, yeah, sorry, we forgot to resurface the tarmac and your private helicopter skidded off the runway. You're not going to be very happy with that. You just want to turn up to the airport, get on your plane and jet off to Basel or wherever it is you're going. And technology like this ensures that you can. So the like I say, the shares are listed on the NASDAQ. I'm incidentally, I'm not getting a commission from Aspen Technology, but if the board's listing, I'm available for a reasonable day rate. But yeah, 40% operating margins, and the shares are available at the moment for about $264, $265 a share. So they're on a fairly chunky PE of about 35 forecast PE. So these aren't cheap. It's a $16 billion market cap business, forecast to grow its turnover next year at about 6%. So there is some growth potential there. It's nudging 52-week highs, but I would suggest that there's a very good reason for that. I think this is a quite a quality business. And I think it's worth listeners going and having a look at it and learning a little bit about the wonders of the technological solutions it provides.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Very well identified, Henry. Good chat on the stock as well. One thing here that I just picked up, and I'd not seen this before myself. It is in the middle of a fight, an M&A fight, we're going back to 27th of January, and Emerson, which is the behemoth, another behemoth, they're all behemoths over there apparently in the US, went to acquire the shares it doesn't already own in Aspen at a 49% premium for $265 per share for $16.8 billion. Yeah. So there's a tender offer going on right now until the 10th of March, apparently. And it looks like they're going to try and get the rest of the shares that they don't have in Aspen Tech. So if I'm interested in Aspen Tech now, I might be looking to get and see what and where the Emerson Electric shares go to as a purchase of them, because they've got a nice bit of kit there, but that's going to be like a multi-stranded sort of entity. I've never looked at Emerson Electric, but I will definitely be having a look at that going forward. And I didn't see the previous previous announcement regarding that takeover. But that looked very, very interesting indeed. And, we occasionally hear of a company called, hedge fund / activist called Elliot.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That name. Something's not quite right, or they're thinking we could have squeezed more out of the orange. There is something here, Henry, where there's Elliot, the provocateur activist, is saying, we think it's unfair. We want more than $265 per share, right? So they're basically pushing and issuing a statement saying that this tender offer should be higher than $265. So why didn't they offer that to buy more of the shares before Emerson came along? So, yeah, no, great call, Henry. Great call on that one. You know what? If you had talked about this stock, mate, in January, early January, or heaven forbid,
like
in
a
November,
right now.
and it had gone up 50%, I'd have been coming down there giving you a bottle of bubbly going.
Yeah.
Like that. Well done, mate. Well done. No, yeah, but I think Emerson's going to be the trick to potentially look at there. But yeah, the thing that stuck on me there, Henry, was your research that said, "Oh, but mate, they've been using AI for 30 years." I'm like, "You what? 30 years, mate." So
Yeah.
we're looking back at the 90s and we're thinking, "What sort of level of AI were they using then?" But clearly, they've aggregated that and supplemented that and improved on that.
There's an
It's the
awful lot
reason
of
why Emerson is now wanting to pay 16, nearly $17 billion for it.
there's an awful lot of hype around AI. And I do use the word hype because that's what it is. People that frankly are used to a very basic level of technology. You know, almost a smartphone is like magic to them. And I don't mean that in a patronizing way. They're looking at AI and going, oh, I can't believe this. It'll talk to me. Actually, that functionality has been there a long time. And when you look at how it's talking to you and what it's doing, most people's experience of, say, ChatGPT, it's Google search. You're using Google search, just not in Google. And it's scraping websites and giving you the data. It's just removing a step. It's not really thinking in the way that it looks like it's thinking. Now, there aren't many AI platforms that do think in the way of thinking. I mean, you and I, for example, we're having a conversation right now. We're dynamically responding to each other. You could say anything and I can respond to you. You can't do that with AI in the same way. You have to prompt it. It can't automatically continue the conversation with you. And I think that's where people are getting very, I don't want, it's not obsessive, but they're very, very positive about the power of AI without actually seeing the use cases in action. And then you look at something like this and you go, well, actually, there is some really clever tech there, but it's been there a long time. This isn't a new thing.
No, I hear you, mate. But I'm just shocked when you said 30 years. I was like, wow. And this is the thing sometimes about doing a good piece of research. You find out stuff about a company where just reading quickly the highlights of an RNS will not tell you. The infrastructure and the technology and the patents that it takes to have been that far ahead 30 years ago. That's worth a lot of money. You can get your hands on that sort of stuff because so many branches come off that if you've got original patents and stuff like that. No. Good call, mate. Very good call. You mentioned HSBC, Henry, which covers the UK and Asia banking and all the rest of it. Yeah. I'm going to go Europe, Eastern Europe, and I'm going to go TBC Bank Group, Henry.
I know the name.
Yes, it's a bit unusual. Bit unusual, mate. What is it? TBC Bank Group PLC is a prominent financial institution headquartered in Tbilisi, Georgia. I've been practicing that pronunciation, by the way. I'm glad I got that one right. And they issued, Henry, their Q4 and full year results on the 12th of Feb, which got my attention. Profits had advanced by 15% for 2024, and that you like, I know you like your return of equity, came in at 25.6%,
Chunky.
and that was still down 90 basis points on what they'd got the year before last. But what I liked about it was their dividend was up 12%, and it appears from what they were saying in the stats that their momentum is continuing and sustainable. For 2025. So what do they do? Essentially, Henry, regarding the bit that jumped out at me here, it's their digital banking, right? The ecosystem that they've built over the past few years. And they're in essentially Georgia and Uzbekistan. And they've saw massive expansion and total users were increasing by 37%. And they're servicing 18 million people with digital banking.
That's
Yeah.
most of the population of Georgia, isn't it?
And
And Scotland,
Uzbekistan, by the
not got
looks
that
of
many
it.
Georgians.
So Georgia and Uzbekistan. So this is what I'm saying. So strong growth, growing dividends, new product launches as well. Several products, including the Salmon card for daily banking, the Osman card for revolving credit, and Uzbekistan's first fully digital SME banking service. So they've got lots and lots of stuff going on. And what I noticed here as well, Henry, was that, and you like this bit because I know I like it, they've made a significant amount of investment in their infrastructure, growing it out, because it quite a lot of Uzbekistan and Georgia is quite rural.
It is,
we touched on the banking being quite poor. So building that out regarding the infrastructure, they've taken on a lot of AI initiatives, and basically looking at that growth and trying to continue it going forward. This is quite an unknown company, Henry, right? However, it's a FTSE 250 company, Henry. Yeah. And the market cap is 2.23 billion as we speak.
2.2 billion?
2.23, 2.25 billion market cap.
Jeez.
And if you ask, I don't know, half the people you know that are interested in investing that you know that don't work in a city, have you heard of TBC Bank? They'll go, no.
I thought it was
you
like
wouldn't have because it's headquartered in Georgia,
million.
but they wouldn't know it's listed on the UK market because no one ever talks about it.
Yeah.
So current price is £40 per share. The PE of 6.28, Henry. A yield of 4.9%, 4.98%. And the 52-week range is £22.64 to 42. So it's right at the top or near the top of its 52-week high. And it's just sitting there. And I'm thinking, this is going to be a very interesting stock to look at. I'm hoping I'm not telling people about it too late and it starts to roll over, because given what was going on or is going on currently with the Ukraine and Russia, maybe a lot of that money was going in and around Uzbekistan and Georgia and helping
well,
them out.
I mean, so, since the war started, I mean, it was what, 2022, you can see an initial drop in the price, but that year the shares were up 40%. They then went up another 25% in 23, another 10% last year. They're up 30% this year. I mean, this thing's just it's skyrocketing is the only word I can use. And it looked to have had some serious volatility last year. So the range,
lots of volatility,
£35 down to as low as about 24, 25. You know, huge volatility, couple of big spikes, and I don't know enough about it to know what caused those. And then it's hit the beginning of this year and just skyrocketed. So I'm amazed.
It's done exceptionally well. I think it's been helped by the war, as you said. I think that's a very good point to make. Dividend payout increased 30% in 2022, dividend payout increased 35% in 2023, and at the moment, for 2024, the payout increased 12%. So it's catching up with itself, you know, because of the phenomenal growth it had in 2022 and 23. But yeah, one of the interesting points again, Henry, regarding this, and I didn't know this before I started researching it to share with you guys. There's a chap called Oliver Hughes, and he's a renowned fintech entrepreneur. And he was appointed as head of international operations to lead their expansion. And he's got extensive experience in building and scaling fintech businesses. So I think that's going to help them going forward if it's not already accelerated their growth, given what's going on. And it's rare that you get an organization that's, you know, based in Eastern Europe being led by somebody who's not Eastern European. Yeah. But they've chosen the best fintech entrepreneur that they can find. And he's gone in there and he's leading the particular fintech head of international operations side. So I don't think they're going to be happy with just growing the shares in the UK whilst being listed in Georgia and growing in Uzbekistan. They're going to be looking elsewhere in Europe to grow TBC Bank operations. So who knows where it can go from here, mate?
Yeah, phenomenal pick that. I mean, my only caveat on it, I'm a little wary of emerging market banks like this, because and this may be me just being fussy about nothing, but how safe are they really? Like, what are they investing in? Who regulates them? I mean, it's listed on the FTSE, so you would hope it's gone through some checks, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, if BlackRock lose their 2 million shares or whatever, they won't even notice. But that's not the same for you and I.
It's a
So
very, very, it's a very good point, mate. Very good point.
I mean, we spoke about the Bank of Georgia, BGC, BGCO, was it BGEO? And again, phenomenal metrics if you look at it just on its own. And it just the fact of where it is and what it is that makes me go, well, I don't know. It's a bit like buying a gold mine in the middle of Africa. Anything
You've
could
got a good
happen.
point, mate. I think if and when this war in Russia and Ukraine ends, and hopefully soon, I think the dynamics might change. And if there's opportunities for people to bank where they would normally bank,
This
maybe
could
some of
take
that money
off.
will get pulled out of Georgia and Uzbekistan. Who knows? So I'm hoping I've not, I've raised it as a possible potential research idea. I'm not picking it now where it's on a 3-year high, and we're coming back here talking about it in another year's time, and it's at a 52-week low. Hopefully not. But it's just another idea, folks, for you guys to ladies and gents to research. And one last thing to share: the currency in Georgia, and you'll like this, Henry. Former Nottingham Forest player was called also called this Larry. It's called the Larry.
I
Have you ever
didn't
heard that?
know
It's
that.
called the Larry, mate. So that's the name Larry is an old Georgian word denoting a hoard, a property. There you go. What do I know?
Well, I don't think she listens, but our marketing manager in our specialty division is Georgian.
Well, you can ask her about
So
TBC Bank, mate.
I
TBC
will be.
Bank.
I'll be going and asking her opinion in the morning.
Absolutely, go for it, go for it. Well, that's my one done, mate. And we'll see what happens with that. I'll come back to that a year from now and see how it's gone on. Right, what have you got as your next one, mate?
Right, well, it's not from Georgia. We're back over in America, actually.
Good.
What I think listeners are going to like, it is IDEX Laboratories, IDXX,
Okie
who
dokie.
develop, manufacture, and distribute diagnostic products, equipment, and services primarily used for pets and livestock. So there's two themes that I think listeners will enjoy there. One, there seems to be a great love of diagnostic manufacturing businesses. You've got Judges Scientific, you've got Oxford Instruments Group, etc. People love them. So there's that angle on it. But people also seem to like the veterinary sciences businesses. So you've got I forget what the one over here is, the little small cap Pets R Us or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's at home.
Anyway, this is a US version, if you like. Doesn't provide veterinary services, but it provides services to vets, if that makes sense. So the key product lines include single-use canine and feline test kits that veterinarians can employ in the office, benchtop chemistry and hematology analyzers, that's blood work, for test panel analysis on site, reference laboratory services, and tests to manage and detect, or detect and manage, disease in livestock. So I think things like mad cow disease, that sort of thing. They also offer veterinary practice management software. So again, if you are a vet, you are trained to cut animals open and help them feel better by stitching them back up and giving them medicine and whatnot. You're not necessarily there to run a business. So veterinary practice management software helps you to run that business. And they also provide consulting services to animal hospitals. So again, they talk to a lot of vets, they do test panels. They will go and talk to animal hospitals about the services that are needed, how you can best help poor animals feel better. They are primarily based in the US, but they do get 35% of their revenue from the rest of the world. And in addition to the livestock, poultry, and the dairy diagnostic tests that I've just spoken about, they've also got two really interesting businesses. They've got a water testing solution arm, which ensures the safety of drinking water, according to them, for over 2.5 billion people around the planet. So
Wow.
this is testing for diseases in water, for
Yeah.
Making sure it's
Please.
safe to drink, that it's not got chemicals in it, etc., that it's being filtered properly. And they also have something called the OPTI, the OPTI medical system, which is a point of care and laboratory diagnostics system for human medicine. So again, they're not just based on animal care, looking after people as well. So this seemed to me like they've got a huge range of quite crucial medical technologies available. Great returns on capital, 42%. And their forecasts are fantastic. Revenue growth of 5% next year, and 12% earnings per share growth. So great metrics, really interesting business. And it's a name that I never hear mentioned over here. So if you are interested in the space of veterinary science and scientific testing equipment, I think this is one you might want to go and do some research on.
Another good call, Henry. Just pulled up a few bits and pieces here from it. And you have got good taste, mate, because you are in the same company as none other than Mr. Terry Smith. Because Fundsmith Equity Fund have got a stake. It's within their portfolio and they've had it for a little while and it's doing all right. They are hardware and software. I wanted to just shout. And didn't want to interrupt you. Just take my money. Just take my money. I'm going to go and buy the bloody thing. I'm going to have to look at where the price is and how much is done year to date. Sorry, in the last 12 months and also year to date. Looking at its recent earnings going back at the beginning of this month, revenue for the quarter or for the fourth quarter of $954 million, up 6% compared to the previous year. Fourth quarter EPS of $2.62, an increase of 13%. So I can see why Terry and yourself like it. Gross profits were also up. Another good stock, Henry. I need to look at US stocks a bit more often.
I
You
like to
know,
throw the odd curveball in.
yeah, I've got a couple of US stocks as we speak, but I don't want to have too many there. I find it hard to run the analysis on them as I do, you know, the way that I do at the moment. So, and the problem I have with them, every time I look at where they are in a sense of the intrinsic value wise, it's like, okay, my analysis comes up that it's worth $1.25 versus $1. I'm thinking I'm paying a premium for it again. And I'm like, no, can't do that. There's bargain. Obviously, there's bargains out there. Otherwise, there will be a 49% premium on that. The last stock you mentioned, but
It's
it's just
harder to
hard, Henry.
identify. I agree with
It's
you. I mean,
hard to
the.
identify because I'm wanting to find something that's fairly priced or undervalued.
Yeah.
And most of the times, I try and crunch and I waste 10 hours on this, that, and the other. It's coming out as, yeah, if it does what it does, you might get 10% out of it. I'm going, not bothering with that. I'm not going to take the risk of it having a profit warning and going down 35% for what could be a 10% gain. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, so I want to have an asset-backed margin of safety on it. And with most of the US stocks, I just can't see a margin of safety. It's that I'm not saying they're all priced to perfection, but there's very little in the way of the metrics that they give their stock. We're looking at if any of our stocks in the UK were given the same metrics as they've got in the US.
Oh, you double the value
The
in the FTSE.
FTSE 100 would be at 10,000 already, easily.
I mean,
You know, but.
interestingly, you talk about asset-backed valuations. There was a re I for the first time in ages, I picked up a copy of Investors Chronicle last week, and there's a really, really interesting article. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. Go buy the paper, basically. But as an overview, they were talking about the importance of intangibles on modern businesses. And I think the figure that was quoted was something like 90% of the American stock market's value is driven by intangibles. They've come up with a really interesting way of measuring this. There was a little equation in there. They pulled a table out and some names. And,
I've done some work on that, mate. Boy, oh boy, you get lost in the weeds on that, mate. Honestly,
well, Verity
you
was.
know.
Like, you must have read that article about six times. Are you going to do anything else?
It's hard, mate. Someone else's
But
intangibles is someone else's, basket case. You know what I mean? So it's really hard.
It's very,
But that's
very
where
difficult. It's
patents and
not.
stuff come in as well, you
Yeah.
see, putting value on patents,
Well,
you
also
know.
intellectual property. I mean, to me, I'm absolutely priceless. But if you ask Verity, I'm only worth about 50p.
I will disagree with that. I'm sure your father-in-law and your mother-in-law will disagree on that. She
So.
values you highly, mate. Great, that is a great stock, mate. Another one that I'm gonna have to have a really good look at. I do like the look of that one, most definitely. And I think, you know what it is, Henry? I think there is an argument for all of us to be more global in our research regarding stocks, even if it drives us back to finding something of a similar nature here that's cheaper. You know, you've got a hardware, software, pet care, water care. It's like, what don't they do? It's absolutely scandalous, mate, IDEX. So I'm going to definitely be looking at having a look at that going forward. I want to say something bad about it, but I can't find anything bad about it, mate.
Excellent.
So no, so well done with that one, mate. Well done. Right. Where am I? Let me find my notes here that I've got regarding this particular one. Right. This is a bit of a controversial one, Henry. I'll just go straight into it. Okay. So we have got a stock that is and operates in the let's let someone we've got a backtrack. It's listed in on the on in the FTSE. Got a market cap of 991 million. Shares, we'll start with the negatives. Share price is down 34%, just under 34% in the past 12 months. Yeah, so why am I talking about it? That's particularly why I'm talking about it, because it's down 34%. The shares are up 45% in the past 3 years. All right, so it's had a good run and now it's rolling over again. Yeah. 52-week range of £4.47 to £7.15. A P of 7.7. Dividends, none. Everyone's switching off already. However, I'm talking about a company which is a bit of an anomaly in what it does. So the company I'm talking about is Yellowcake PLC. It does not operate or own any uranium mines directly. Instead, they focus on holding physical uranium oxide concentrate and engaging in uranium-related commercial activities.
What does that mean?
Their
Making nuclear
uranium holdings
bombs?
are stored. Say again?
What does that mean? Making nuclear bombs? Oh.
No. I'm going to get to the usage and all the rest of it in a little while, mate. Bear with me. Bear with me, caller. Their uranium holdings are stored in facilities operated by third parties such as Cameco in Canada and Orano in France. They have a strategic partnership with Gazatomprom, which allows them to purchase significant volumes of uranium at prevailing market prices. This partnership is a key component of their business model of providing them with access to material volumes of uranium without the need to manage or operate mines themselves. So you see what they're doing? It's like, almost like a not a royalty company, but a trading company in that space. 28th of January, they came out with their quarterly operating update, and basically the uranium spot price decreased 10% from $81 and 75 pounds on September 30th, 24 to 70. Yeah, so at the quarter, they, well, basically, Henry had a decrease for that quarter of 10%, right? So you can see where the share price has been drifting. At the peak back in September, or the recent peak for the uranium prices. But the share price, I think, has come down a bit too much, right? So the share price is at £4.51. The net asset value, as of the last update we had on the 28th, which is only a couple of weeks back in January, is sitting here, having a further down 4.4% for the quarter of £6.17. Share price £4.51. So you see the discount there that I'm saying to the NAV. Highly
Yeah.
volatile, really uncertain. However, bear with me. I can see you getting fidgety and your face is going, what an absolute crap one he's talking about here. Right. So their revenues have increased over the years. So we're talking from 15.9 million in 2019. In 2022, it was 424 million. So that's a really big move over the past 3 years. Yeah. Sorry, over that 3 year period. However, it then dropped off. And in 2024, we were at significantly lower than that. Right now, yeah, it's saying that it's in a situation where they've got a lot of catalysts coming their way. And one of the catalysts I want to talk about, I want to get to this bit, which might get you a bit more exciting, okay?
Don't say
Is that,
nuclear bombs.
no, stop saying that. Stop saying that. Bear with me. Come on, give me a chance. Right? It's saying that the uranium market is forecast to grow at a CAGR of 8.09% between 2023 and 2028. We're in 2025, so that's going to carry on for a little while longer, right? The drivers for the uranium price and uranium usage, right, is essentially, as you've said there, yeah, it's primarily used for nuclear power plants. However, the largest consumers of uranium, it's the United States, China, and France. Okay. And for me, the thing that no one's talking about is this big surge in the need for power and energy for data centers. Everyone's talking about AI, the need data centers to power that, Henry, right? We were already talking and fretting about the fact we don't have enough power in the UK and we're going to have blackouts and we're going to have energy and blah, 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 blah. Who's going to keep the lights on? Yeah, when the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow, the UK is absolutely, yeah, without power. So data centers, will they start utilizing or going down the route of being powered by nuclear power? There's already talk about Rolls-Royce getting involved in SMRs. What are SMRs?
Small
Small
modular
modular
reactors.
reactors. Small modular reactors. Okay. So that's the reason why I brought this one to the attention of people, because I think there's a chance and an opportunity here, maybe for that to go from, a good run of 3 years, it's down significantly, 34% in the past 12 months. Will there be a base here or a base soon at some point? And can that carry on going forward and have a bit of growth? So that's why I wanted to bring it to the attention of folks. Yeah, it's not something that most people want to get involved in. I understand that uranium and all the different issues they've had with that particular energy source. But I like to bring the unusual, mate. Listed in the UK, as I said before, market cap of just shy of 1 billion. Shares are down 34%. I'm looking at it. I'm thinking, yeah, well, I'm waiting for that little thing to curve back up or some good news to come its way or someone to say, actually, we're going to start using nuclear energy to source and do this or whatever. That's why I'm bringing it to your attention, Henry. Right? You can absolutely smash it to pieces now. Go ahead. Biting the bit there.
Well, it's definitely an interesting pick, and it's a name I know. I've seen a lot of chatter about with retail investors, and I had no idea it had dropped as far as it has. So it's climbed at a reasonable pace. Then I think everybody's gone bananas about it and gone, oh my gosh, we're all going to have nuclear cars and
It
microwaves
went
and who
off
knows
too
what
far
for.
too fast and came down. Yeah,
And then
absolutely.
people went, oh, hang on a minute, everyone's bankrupt and we don't want nuclear power plants every 10 meters down the road. And the share prices collapsed again.
Nobody wants a plant near them. Exactly, mate.
My question, really, with this, from the way you've described it, it sounds to me like it's basically a trading firm that buys
Yep.
uranium and sells it to other people. So you're effectively backing an asset manager. So think like, a fund manager, right? So you go, we talked about Terry Smith a moment ago. You give Terry Smith £1,000, he goes and puts it into the market for you, and you hope he buys good companies that go up. Are Yellowcake effectively doing the same thing? You give them 1,000 £1,000, they go buy uranium and you just hope they can sell it to someone else for more than they bought it for. Is that it?
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
That's rather crude and impolite, I would say, Henry. But yes, it is essentially a trading company. Exactly.
Okay.
But every single company, the BlackRocks of the world, the Goldman Sachs of the world, they've got a trading arm, whether it be in oil or something else. Whether
it be gold, silver, they've got a trading arm. As a concept.
Exactly. So this essentially is a trading entity for spot uranium.
So if you think, if the thesis is that uranium is going to go up because of all the extra demand, why not just go buy an ETF that gives you exposure to uranium and cut out the middleman that's trying to make profit on the commodity price?
You could do that. If I haven't checked. Maybe I should have done that. You may be able to do a quick check. Is there a uranium ETF? I'm sure there probably is. Someone probably thought about it. And there's an ETF for everything these days, you know what I mean?
Because you can buy things that are pegged to most. So you can definitely buy things that are pegged to, say, grain or orange juice futures. I mean, I think our favorite film, we've talked about Trading Places. There's that great scene
at the end,
commodities market, you know, and they've shorted orange juice futures and bankrupted the Watsit brothers.
Absolutely. So
you, as far as I'm aware, you can definitely buy assets that will peg to a commodity. That's not really a criticism as much as a clarification. You know, if you're after exposure to the commodity, I'd cut out the middleman and just get rid of the yellow coat PLC bit.
Okay,
having said that, they could do more.
Yeah. There's probably more to it than that. So you've nailed it there as well. I have got, for those that are interested, anyone who's forced me to Google, I have gone on Google, and I've found, and I hadn't done this before, so I didn't know these were out there. And you're right with your analysis, Henry, in a sense of there's 8 here. Sprott Junior Uranium Miners ETF. Sprott Uranium Miners ETF. Global X Uranium Index ETF, Global X Uranium UCITS ETF, USD, Global X, and Defiance Daily Target 2x Long Uranium ETF. There's a few out there, Henry.
Yeah, watch out for anything that says 2x leveraged on it, guys. Just
just
buy
ignore
beware.
That. Yeah, so there's a few ETFs out there to have a look at that. And if you want to do that, go down that particular route. So yeah, there you go, mate. There you go. That's me done. So I'll take one out of two, Henry.
It's an interesting name. And again, the thing I would point out here, I've seen a lot of people talking about this, like a lot. YCA is one of those tickers I see all over the place. If you liked it at £8 a share, it's now available at, what did you say? £4.50?
£4.50.
£4.51,
so you should
be loading up. You should be out there with your wheelbarrows buying as much as you can if you liked it.
A year and a half ago, everyone was talking about it. I don't see that many people talking about it
and
now.
That's the thing.
Nobody wants to talk about the stocks at 52, near 52-week lows, mate.
So, yeah. Interesting pick.
Listen, I'm looking at the stocks that are nearer the 52-week lows, mate. Yeah.
Well, I can give you one of those. It's called DGI9.
You keep mentioning that one to me. I'm not going back there, mate. Once I've said goodbye, once I've divorced that stock, mate, I might keep an eye on it. But at very rare, I'm going to go back and remarry that one, mate. Once a sinner, always a sinner, mate. Ain't coming back to my church. That's a definite. You know what I mean? Right. So I'm done, mate. That's I only brought two to the table this week. If you've got a third one, then I'll talk about Memphis and we'll call it a day.
Yeah, just a really brief one. I know we've got some good feedback on investment trusts previously. So there was a new one I came across this week whilst I was just doing a little bit of reading. It was ICG Enterprise Trust. The ticket is ICGT. It's a private equity investor in the UK, investing primarily in profitable, cash generative private companies in Europe and the US, with the aim of generating defensive growth over the long term. So hopefully you can see why this piqued my interest. There's lots of words in there I like. It's also the only, and this is by their, I've not gone and verified this independently, but they say they are the only UK listed private equity investor solely focused on investing in buyouts globally. Now, quite what difference that makes, I'm not sure, but again, maybe you've got something that's a bit of a unique asset here. 40 years in the market, 15 years of consecutive growth. They've done 11% annualized over 10 years, and they're trading on a 34% discount to NAV. And when I went and had a look at the portfolio just to see what they've invested in, there were a few names that popped out at me. David Lloyd Leisure, do you know the premium health clubs? They've got a
Of
holding in
course,
that.
of course, of course, of course, mate. We do
So
have
it's.
one in Leicestershire, mate, which is good.
Yeah, you
I think we
see,
may have more than one in Leicestershire, actually.
I walked past on the way to go to Greg's. Yeah, David Lloyd Leisure. You've got Vistage, who are a provider of CEO leadership and coaching for SMEs in the US, a bit of a management consultancy type of business.
And in the UK, and in the UK.
Oh, in the UK as well. I didn't
Oh,
know
they're in the
that.
UK, Vistage, mate. I've got a few friends that are members of Vistage.
Oh, very fancy. Yeah, they don't take plebs like me. Brooks Automation. So for all of you guys and gals out there that are obsessed over Nvidia and the semiconductor rampage at the moment, Brooks Automation is a provider of semiconductor manufacturing solutions. So there are options out there other than just Nvidia and ASML you can go and have a look at. And DigiCert, who are a provider of enterprise security solutions. So these are just a four or five of the dozens of private investments that they've got. But yeah, interesting fund, not one I hear mentioned a lot. I thought listeners might like to go and take a peek at it, see what's under the bonnet. And yeah, maybe it's one you want to add to your portfolio.
You said something in the middle of that, Henry, right? And I had to lean in. And they're essentially involved, as you said, yeah, globally in commercial property, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. And to navigate globally all the different macro and then movers and shakers and all the stuff that's going on, it's an absolute nightmare because what the markets are great in the US or parts of the US. Other parts of the US, it's absolutely, rubbish. Parts of the UK, absolutely going gangbusters. Other parts of the UK, you can't sell two houses for the price of one. Yeah. So actually, you've achieved over 10 years a go to sleep sort of return of 11% compounded. That is pretty darn good, mate. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
And it's clearly not getting the love it should be getting because. You and I have invested in some investment trusts and some REITs, and they haven't achieved 10%
Not gone anywhere.
return in 3 years I was holding it. And that includes dividend. I'm so fed up with people talking about, oh, the yield on this is this much on this REIT. I'm like, shut up. Will you please shut up about the yield on this particular investment trust? Look at the total
Guilty as
returns of the
charged.
past, not just you, many others. The yield on the 12 months. Despite the 7-8% yield is minus 8%,
Yeah.
right? Over 3 years, it's minus 20%. I'm like, oh, so a 10, 11% CAGR over 10 years for doing now. If I was a landlord hearing this, listening to this now, I'm not going to deal with any tenants. I've got not to deal with any repairs. I've got not to deal with it with the revenue and all the different changing rules and being the landlord, I'd be like, there you go, mate. I sold me 30 properties and I've just wedded it to whatever the ticker symbol was. You know, oh my gosh. ICG Enterprise Trust, mate. That's what I'll be. I've got loads of mates, got loads of properties, mate. And I'll say, are you return have you returned, you know, 11% compound over the last 10 years? And we're going, I'll come back to you on that, Pete. And when they
Yeah,
come back to
stick a
me, we're going,
decimal point in between the two ones, and you might
no, but
have
11%, Henry, without all of that other noise, yeah, and the voids, yeah, and the repairs, and the non-payers, yeah, and those that just camp out and going, we're staying here, we're squatting, we're not moving, I mean, we're not paying you either. Got to get the bailiffs in, and the hoarders that trash the place as well, and lead vermin into. Ooh, ICGT, mate, whatever the ticker symbol is. Yeah. You smashed it. Mate, you've got three out of three. You got three out
Amazing.
of three, mate.
Can't
Nice
keep me
one.
down. I'll come back swinging.
It's three out of three, mate. So, this right, and this is my last frustration, right? And don't mention your stock again, right? Because that name is just like in my ear. There is all of these investment trusts, REITs, commercial property, blah, 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 infrastructure ones as well, that have not done so well, right, over the past 3 years for a variety of different reasons, poor management, etc. I'm asking you this question, Henry, right? We've heard about all of those stocks that have done so well over the past 3 years. Why have we heard less about Enterprise that smashed it for the past 1, 3, 5, 10 years? Why have we heard less about that one in comparison to the ones that have done poorly? What's going on there? That's a question to you, Henry. Wake up, come on. Lost you, Henry. You're frozen. Right, temporarily, folks, we have lost Henry. His connection has gone down. I'm going to carry on in the hope that Henry comes back on screen in a minute. He's back. He's back. Did you hear the question? You froze for about a good minute there, mate.
Why didn't we hear? Sorry, ladies and gents. I'm trapped in the middle of central London, and apparently we don't have the internet here today. So, I'm currently sending messages via carrier pigeon, I think. So
So
why haven't we
why have we heard
heard?
about that one less than the others that are doing poorly, mate? What's your thoughts?
Right, I think there's two things. Number one, nobody likes to give their money to somebody else and give them the credit. Everybody likes to say they've done it themselves, right? So people like to stock pick. So
Okay.
investment trusts generally are seen as a, I'm not going to play around with that. That's for people that they're not as clever as me. I'll do it myself. So lots of
Right.
retail investors will avoid investment trusts completely crazily, in my opinion, because there's some great ones out there. Bear in mind, I've had a terrible track record with them, so I don't. Anyway, I think the second reason is the yield on it. So it currently on a distribution yield of 2.9%. So if I said to you, I'll take £10,000 off you, I'll pay you, what would that be? 290 quid a year every year, right? Or I'll take £10,000 off you, and you can put it in HSBC. And I'll pay you 9.5%, 950 quid. Which one are you going to go for?
Yeah, but if it was HSBC, I'd take the 9%. Of course I would. But this what I'm saying, like for like in a commercial investment REIT, yeah, we have got for some reason this herd-like
Obsession.
mentality of people as a cohort going for the highest yield
I
in that
agree.
sector. And I need to just shout this as loud as I possibly can to people. Don't keep chasing it for the yield. Yeah. Have a look at what its total return is for the last 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, and in your example, 10 years, because that shows a consistent approach and management, yeah, performance.
Well,
And
it's
if the
about
yield is lower, there's lower for a reason because they're getting the capital gains more so than it is the yield. So you've got 2.9% and it's banging out a total returns of 11% a year. So you're getting just over 7 point whatever it is, yeah, as a capital gains, nearly 8%, 8.2%, sorry,
And
on top of top
well,
2.9.
people don't
So
have the
compounding
patience
that
as
for the last
well.
10 years, honestly.
They don't have the patience. So I've given you the 10-year figure and you've gone, right, I love that. But the last 5-year results really haven't been that spectacular. So last year they did 5.2%. The year before they did 4.1%. They lost 7% the year before. The year before that, they went up 32%. Now, just play those in reverse a second and imagine that that's 2021, 22, 23, 24. So in 2021, you go up 5.2%. You've underperformed the market. The S&P's gone up 10%. 2023, you've gone up 4%. 2022, you've gone up 4%. The S&P goes up another 10%. You've underperformed the market. 2023 comes around. You now lose 7%. What are you doing here, right? You've sold out. You've gone. By the time 2024 comes around and the 32% return comes, you've gone. You've sold. You've moved on to the next thing because this thing is underperforming the market. You've not given it the 10 years it needed. And
The
you've
average
got no
person's
way
not
of
got the
knowing
patience,
that it was
exactly.
going to do that. Because the thing about private equity, it's not like selling, I don't know, tires, right? One day I sell a tire. If the next day I sell two, I've doubled my revenue. If the next day I sell three, I've tripled my revenue. All I've got to do is find more people to buy more tires off me. As long as I can manufacture them and I can sell them, I'll make more money. It's as simple as that. With private equity, it's different. I can't always
Yes, agreed.
guarantee I've got more tires coming in because I've got to find the things in the first place. And they're not all the same, right? They're all slightly different. Some are good businesses, some are bad. I've then got to hold them for who knows how long whilst I spruce them up a little bit, give them a bit of a polish. Then I've got to find someone to buy the thing, right? And they could walk away. They might not agree with me on the price. And who knows how long that could take. Some things I could flip in a year, others might take me 10. Very, very different mindset to a business where, to come back to the tires, all you've got to do, manufacture tires and find more buyers. Much easier for an investor to understand that and be patient with it. And you can see the returns of good management much more quickly and much more immediately.
Very good point. Very, very well made. So here's a trick that I use, Henry. And I'm not saying my hit rate's that brilliant on this particular trick, but this is a tip that I would give people. If you're looking at the 5 year, 3 year, 10 year sort of total returns, and it's an out of favor sort of entity like that, investment trust, private equity vehicle, and the total returns for 10 years, 5 years, whatever, is significantly below what it's achieved in the past 6 months or year. Depending on where it is in the cycle, you've got that buffer of plus 11%, as in the case that you've got. And in the past 12 months, it's done minus 11%. There's a buffer there of 22% where it's averaged over the past previous umpteen years. Therefore, when the cycle changes, you can buy nearer the lower entity of that 22% range. And hopefully, if the catalysts come and the cycle changes, you've got the opportunity to gain from something that's now in minus territory for the past 12 months, an opportunity over the next 12 months to 2 years to gain 22% if it goes back to its normal annualized return. So that's what I'm looking at all the time when I'm
Yeah.
looking at those sort of vehicles. Right, I'm conscious of how long this one's running. I thought it was going to be a quickie, but it is not. Henry, very well done with your stocks there, sir. I will just quickly mention, I've got a few names to shout out here. The Memphis charity that we're fundraising for, as I said in the last pod, we are raising funds to ensure that some young disabled individuals, young men and women, get the opportunity to go into places of employment. And we put together and prepare them for employability. So they go on as adults in future years, gain full-time employment, and have an opportunity to live independent lives with their own revenues, with their own employment with their own accommodation and independent than everybody. So that's what we're trying to do. We're going to try and put on a course at the end of this year to facilitate all these young people that we put through the system to get a job, to get the training for a job, to get onto employment. So to do that at the end of this year, we're going to have to raise £30,000. I've started the process regarding this with a Just Giving page, which you can find at www.justgiving.com/page/Peter Higgins. It's a Twin Peaks challenge for 2025, folks. And we're currently sitting at 1,135 plus gift aid. We've had a few donations from the last pod, so thank you ever so much. I'm going to give a quick shout out to at Faisal. That's Faisal with a five in the middle of that name, not an S, but a five. Fantastic for you to make a donation. And Faisal's comments were, keep up the great work. And he donated £20 and £5 gift aid. We had Chris Kopak. And Chris left the comment of, great course and love the podcast. So thank you, Chris. And Chris donated £50 and £12.50 gift aid. Really appreciate that. We had a regular, very generous donor who's donated significantly over the past few years to us, and with his wife as well. Kevin and Joanne Taylor, thank you ever so much, donated £200 to the Twin Peaks Challenge for fundraising for Memphis. Best of luck with a great cause. Thank you, Kevin and Joanne. And we have Electric Trends, who's donated previously significantly to us on numerous other challenges for fundraising we've done. And simple words were, awesome job, exclamation mark, and generously donated £500 plus £125 gift aid, taking us to 1135. So I want to say a big, big thank you to Faisal, Chris, and Kevin, Joanne, and Eclectic Trends for your generous donations. If you haven't done so already, please consider making a donation to the Just Giving page. You can find at justgiving.com/page Peter Higgins for the Memphis charity, which we're going to donate to at the end of the year. We had a mental health day 2 weeks ago, and I went there again on the Sunday and volunteered. We had about 20 families plus X amount of kids there. And it was a nice, relaxing day. We had meditations. We had massage. We had hot air balloon then. You know, I can't even think what the name is now.
Hot stones by any
Bouncy
chance?
Castle. I'm looking for a bouncy castle. It's that time of day right now.
How did you go from hot to bouncy castle?
Yeah, yeah, bouncy castle, mate. Brain's gone. Bouncy castle. At cinema, we had the relaxation sensory room open as well, and various different stuff going on. And we're going to have a Mother's Day thing going on soon. And we've got a sports event as well next month. So we're doing loads and loads of things to raise money for this, but for Memphis and all the children that we support. Final thing before I go, I want to mention this particular book here, my new book. As you can see, it's crispy new. I've barely started reading it yet. And this is a chap you can find on Twitter. And the book is called How Not to Invest by Barry Ritholtz. And the foreword is by Morgan Housel. Essentially, the book is designed to reduce mistakes. This is why we've been doing the pod for how long. And this is why Henry and I spend so much time researching stuff for you guys. And telling you about our mistakes, so you guys don't, ladies and gents, don't make them. So designed to reduce mistakes, your mistakes with your money, tiny errors, epic fails, everything in between. You can do 1,000 things right, but make just a few of the errors and it will mess with your portfolio and destroy your investments. So this book here, the ideas, numbers, behaviors that destroy wealth and how to avoid them. A big, big, big book here. You can find Barry on X and other places. So that's the book I'm recommending people to go out there and have a little look at. It's obviously another Harriman House book, not obviously, but it is another recommendation to go out there and read. Once you learn stuff, they cannot take it away from you, folks. Right, Henry, what do you want to close on?
I think just a thank you to the audience, a thank you to you, Peter. A thank you to everybody that has donated. Please do go and visit that Just Giving page. You can either search for Twin Peaks 2025, search for Peter Higgins, you will find it. We'll be putting the links out on social media, but every penny makes a huge difference to children that really do need the help and their families. So if you can spare a few pounds, please do consider it. Thank you to everybody that's written in about the last podcast as well. I mean, my phone's honestly not stopped pinging. I'm getting
Absolutely.
texts and emails and everything. You know, it's absolutely lovely. So yeah, if you've messaged me and Peter and you've not messaged Paul, do drop him a note as well at Paul Edenbrow on Twitter. I know he'd love to hear from you. And generally, just stay safe and happy investing.
Absolutely. I completely agree with what Henry said there. Paul's been exceptional. We've had lots of contacts from everybody. And please keep sending your feedback to him, and keep considering or going to find his account and follow his account. Lots of really, really good ideas, and his stocks for 2025 have already started quite well as well. Okie doke, folks, that's it. It's a bit of a marathon, this one. I've had lots to cover. Hopefully you enjoy it. Please subscribe to YouTube. Please like. Please reshare. When you see Henry's tweet with the main post on it, or my post with the main podcast 147 on it, and just give us your feedback as to what your thoughts are on this. Trash talk some of the stocks that I've picked as well. Tell me where I went wrong, and give me some other suggestions that you think are good ideas as well, so I can improve with my ideas on this particular show. All right, ladies and gents, that is an absolute wrap. Henry and I are going to leave you now and see you in 2 weeks' time. Which I think will be March, for heaven's sakes.
Don't say
By the time we
that.
record the next pod, it's flying by, Henry. And we've got some news about March as well. Henry and I will share with you about an event we will be at in March. More news to come, folks. Watch this space. Right, ladies and gents, take care. Henry, thank you ever so much again, sir. You absolutely smashed it. And we will see you, ladies and gents, in 2 weeks' time. Take care. Be safe. Be kind. Be generous, be considerate. Bye-bye for now.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.